So here I am in the Intercontinental in Singapore. Middle Road, Singapore, to be precise. And it continues to be a massive pleasure to travel the world and continues to be a massive pleasure to work with leaders all over the world. And as I work with leaders all over the world, I meet incredible human beings who have got incredible stories of bravery, resilience, and just an ability sometimes to see the good in anything. And I met one of those people in this current trip in Singapore. And so you need to hear this story of human endeavor and resilience and positivity. So come back to me just after this break, where I'm talking to the wonderful Sapna Gopalakrishnan, and she has a story to tell. Come back to me just after this. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to the Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. So Sapna, thank you so much for joining me in the middle of the foyer of the Intercontinental in Singapore to talk to me on the Leadership Enigma.
Thank you for the opportunity. I think I'm super happy that I'm able to do this and share my story.
I'm really, really grateful to you for taking the time out to do this. Listen, we've just been at a conference together for a couple of days, and you have an amazing story, a very powerful story to share, and I thank you in advance for that. And I want to take us back to 2019, because 2019 was a year of two halves in some ways. In March 2019, you got the job of you know, really a job that you cherished. Just tell everyone, what happened in March 2019?
So I joined this company in March of 2019. I was extremely happy because it was a great work environment, great colleagues, great work, and everything was going perfect. Cut to a couple of months down the line, and again, nothing out of the ordinary, or at least I thought so. I was falling sick like every 2 months. I was going to the doctor for like, you know, basic wheezing, and I was getting the flu, and I was getting like a little bit of sinusitis. I was on steroids, and I didn't realize that obviously my immunity at this stage was going pretty low. I did a couple of holidays. I came back with a minor throat pain. I didn't think too much of it, and a couple of days later it went into a fever, and all of a sudden it became this sort of full-blown infection where I couldn't wake up from the bed. I was like completely nauseous, delirious. I had very low BP. I had gone to two separate doctors who sort of just gave me antibiotics to get rid of the infection, if you will. And I had this massive sort of swelling in my neck. Again, didn't think too much of it. I had gone to the dentist in the middle just for a basic cleanup. And you know, in hindsight, of course, everything seems clear. But at that moment in time, I was wondering what the hell was wrong with me. I was rushed to the ER on one night, thankfully well in time. And later on, I got to know that I had I was diagnosed with sepsis, which became a full-blown septic shock. I was in a coma for 2.5 to 3 weeks. And I woke up with tubes sticking, you know, like from every part of my body. I was in a ventilator. I had like multiple organ failure. And I was I had like 7 to 8 blood transfusions. And at this point, of course, my blood was coagulating and the doctors had to choose life over limb. I was in vasopressors. The blood was sort of directed from the extremities to the main organs to keep me alive. And gangrene had also set in. So I think a lot of things happening all at once.
I mean, you're laughing. But as people are listening to this, they're probably already holding their heads and thinking, oh my word, hang on, that's an incredible kind of list of events. Let me just go backwards slightly, because just help everyone understand, you had the delight of the job that you started. Just tell people, what was that job in March 2019 that you got?
Oh, so I was legal counsel at a pharmaceutical company.
Yes.
And I was partnering the general medicines vertical, ironically, if you will.
There is
also
an irony
working
there,
on anti-infectives, yes. And talking about antimicrobial resistance. And little did I know that dark comedy, one day I would be, you know, sort of subject to it.
And you had no idea that what was happening was about to happen. You say, actually, you in some ways, you dismissed a number of the early issues.
Yeah, because I don't think that, I mean, when, you know, medical doctors are telling you that everything's fine and these medicines are going to take care of you, I don't think you sort of try and make it into something bigger than it really is.
Yeah.
And honestly, I didn't think anything was wrong with me. I still don't think anything's wrong with me, but yeah.
Well, and I love that. That's a, you know, part and parcel of why I wanted us to have this particular conversation. Now, again, let me just break this down a little bit, because you actually said you ended up in full septic shock, which is blood poisoning, and a coma for 3 weeks, gangrene, organ failure.
Yep.
The doctors had to make decisions in relation to life or actually amputation. All of this, I'm assuming, as well with your family, you know, deeply worried whilst you are now unable even to communicate.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what it was like when you first woke up from 3 weeks in a coma, because you had no idea, did you, at that point, what was going on or
Not
what had
all.
Gone on?
I was thinking that I was sent to the hospital for some, like, to just get, like, sugar and, like, you know, probably my BP was low.
Yeah.
I wasn't waking up from a coma, and my dad had this brilliant idea of playing a recording of a song that I had sung. So
right.
I had a very Bollywood waking up, if you will.
Okay.
And of course, I had no clue. And I think the only worry that I had at that point in time was that I had a music exam coming up and I'm not prepared. And I think this sort of gave some reassurance to my husband and my family, because at one point they did think that the gangrene might have gone to the brain and they were wondering if there's brain damage. So
right.
clearly this gave them the reassurance that, okay, she remembers things.
You're worrying about your music exam.
Yes, and I was getting angry. So they were like, okay, that's great. So she still has her, yeah, her anger with her, so which means that she's still there. Yeah.
There's a little bit of, I wanted to tell a little bit of, you had some experiences, didn't you, when you mentioned almost an out-of-body experience. And just tell the listeners a little bit about this sensation or this feeling that you had.
I had a couple of out-of-body experiences, actually. So I am not very religious, but I am spiritual.
Right.
But this has sort of made me believe even more in the unknown. In fact, I did have on two separate occasions, two healers coming and telling my husband that everything will be fine and she will be fine and you're not letting go, and to sort of visualize having a great future together. I think, and I don't know if you think about it, it just seems extremely strange. My husband doesn't really believe in any of this, but at that point he was willing to, you know, look into anything. So we did a lot. He did a lot of different things, actually. Visualization techniques, healing music. And I was listening to this healing music throughout, right? This is DNA healing music. It actually really helped. I don't know if it helped like a placebo, but it did help.
Right.
And I had a sort of out-of-body experience where I could see my friends sitting around a canteen table and laughing, and I could see another friend sitting somewhere else and sort of, you know, lying down. And later on, they told me that they were actually, you know, doing these activities. It was very strange. And so also I had hallucinations of like computers with like, you know, those old sort of monitor heads that you had in the 90s.
Why computers?
I have no idea. I'm not really into computers, but I was wondering why R2-D2 is not there. I'm a huge Star Wars fan.
Right.
Yeah. And they were probably just all the machines that I was hooked onto. At some point I had a visualization that there was some strange robot girl sitting next to me. And I have a distinct memory of getting the tracheostomy done, and that was pretty harrowing. And I remember this robot girl telling me that everything will be fine. It's bizarre if you look at it, but I think it's all these little things that I remember. And I remember speaking about this to somebody else that, you know, things were very, very bad. But when I look back, I can actually remember all these little instances that happened. And they just make me smile, actually, you know.
This is why it's so incredible, because you actually went through this incredible trauma. And this was months of medical issues and painful recovery. And in some ways, you weren't even conscious for some of it. So you're trying to piece it together through what you're hearing from family and friends and maybe little bits of memory. Now that we're sat here and you're thinking back, what do you make of almost how life just turned on a dime and you've gone from achieving the job of your dreams at a large a pharmaceutical company to suddenly your life was... I think you actually said the doctors at one point told your family you had a 0 to 5% chance of living. Is that right?
That is right, yes. And they said, oh, call everybody. So like a very sort of a... Again, I know I keep saying this, but I relate it to like films and pop culture. Maybe that sort of helped me get through it. Music helped me get through a lot of things. Like I had a song for... when I was sad, I had a song for when I wanted some energy.
Yeah.
It's just really strange. But it did happen. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your music background, because you've mentioned that a few times in relation to that, giving you some strength for this.
Oh, yes.
So what's the music interest for you?
So I've always loved music. I sort of look for music in everything. If you see me just dancing and nodding my head, it's because I'm hearing music in my head.
Okay.
I've learned a little bit of music as a child, like traditional Indian Carnatic music. And then later on, after I moved to Bombay, I sort of started I gave my Rock School of London exams. I finished my grade 8 exams a couple of years ago, actually, after I sort of completely
recovered.
Are
these singing exams? Are they?
These are singing vocal exams. That's
okay.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I'm a very dramatic person in that sense, but it really helped me. So there's a song called Feeling Good by Nina Simone. And ironically, that's the song that was playing in my head throughout. It was almost like an affirmation for me.
Right.
I remember singing that song in my head when I woke up, when I was being wheeled into the operation theater for my amputation exams.
Right.
Sorry, not my exams. Apologies.
There's a Freudian slip there.
Oh, yes. An exam for the doctors, hopefully. But and they passed. And apparently the surgeon was telling me that I was I was coming off of anesthesia and I was singing out loud and shouting in the operation theater. And I honestly think that all these things really helped me. It's the little things that matter. And I know you asked me a question. I sort of deviated from that. When I look back, a couple of things that come to my mind.
Yes.
That a lot of people go through a lot of bad situations, right? Because life is nothing without its ups and downs. In my case, it was bad, yes. But I also think I was extremely fortunate because I had amazing people around me. And I had so much of support and community. And again, that's what got me through it. And it helped build my own strength in a certain way. The fact that people believed in me almost, that you know, I would get through it. I kept getting support constantly from my friends, my family,
yep,
my colleagues, my bosses. At no point did I feel that I'm going to lose my job. So, you know, just having that sort of security was a huge load off of my shoulders. And it really helped me to concentrate my recovery because I had to relearn everything, like relearn talking, walking, eating. And I'm a huge foodie. I remember being so pissed off that I couldn't eat for such a long time. And I was craving like watermelon. I have no idea why. I wanted to be on a beach, just sitting and sit and have watermelon juice. And I was just thinking that, okay, one day I'm going to go to the beach and have watermelon juice.
Yeah.
And I'm actually going to Bali tomorrow, so I'm going to do that.
Oh, because we are, already in the exotic Singapore. And if you can hear noises in the background, that's just part and parcel of hotel life here.
Oh, yeah.
As we're at the Intercontinental. You mentioned community. Tell me a little bit more, because I know as we were chatting earlier, you talked about the power and the warmth you felt from so many people in relation to supporting you in every way possible. So who do you mean when you say community? Who were, no one can do it all by themselves, and we always say no leader has always got the answers.
Yeah.
So who was this community, Samna?
I mean, my husband, of course. Yeah, he was my rock throughout. I have no idea what he must have gone through. I think it must have been
probably got a lot of gray hair from this experience.
Thankfully, no. I think I have more grays than him. But no, seriously, I think he has been like my rock solid support throughout. My family, my parents-in-law, my siblings, you know, my sister's two little kids, and she came running.
This happened in Mumbai, didn't it?
This all happened in Mumbai, yes.
Okay.
And everybody's in different cities, right? And these guys came. My friends were so fabulous. They took turns to stay at the hospital. They sort of told my husband that, you know, why don't you go home? Cousins. It was it literally felt like there was an army behind me. And I think that's why I'm saying that it was, I was so, so, so grateful to have this. You know, normally sometimes you feel, oh, I just want to be left alone.
Yep.
And that happens at times. But then you realize the power of just people and also the power of just asking for help. I think a lot of us fail to understand that, you know, you don't need to, being strong just doesn't mean doing everything by yourself and not asking people for help. It's so important to just take the courage to say, look, I need help here. And I think you will find it if you know, you really ask for it. I think that was another huge lesson that I had.
Yes.
Also the fact that I think energy just rub off. Like I said, like looking at it from a third person's point of view, you know, every time I started feeling pity for myself, I just started thinking that, yeah, I know, but just look at this. I mean, I'm in a great hospital, which has fabulous, like almost 5-star care. And not many people can afford it. And not many people have the luxury of it. Not many people have people looking after them. Not many people have the job security. But here I am and I have everything here. So why am I even complaining?
How did you even tap into you? Because you've used a word with me earlier, gratitude. And you've gone through a near-death experience. How were you still able to look around you and be grateful for the situation you were in, the care that you were getting? How was that possible?
Again, this is not really advice. It's just work for me. I think firstly, just accepting that something has happened to you.
Right.
I think that's where a lot of us sort of fail to understand that, okay, this has actually happened to me. Yes, it has happened to me, but it doesn't define me. So firstly, accepting it. And then just wanting to move ahead. In my head, I still remember a surgeon asking me, they're like, oh, but you know what? You're a right-hander and you still have some of your limb, your fingers intact. So you should be able to do your basic things. You should be able to use the computer. You should be able to cook. And in my head, I'm like, no, but I want to surf. I love mountain climbing. I want to be able to do that. I said, that is normal for me, you know. So I think it's... You should definitely want to keep your dreams alive. You might need to change it a little bit, but it doesn't mean that you give up. And so I think, yeah, so for me, it was just about accepting it.
Okay.
And then about saying that, okay, this is where I want to be. And then what do I need to do to get there?
Right.
It was almost, I think, being that sort of lawyer helped me in that sense because I love lists. And this was sort of the list that I had in my head. I'm like, okay, one day at a time. Today, okay, I've accepted. Okay, this has happened to me. Now move on. Now put it behind me. I can't do anything about it, right? And when something is not really in your control,
yes,
there's no use stressing about it.
So help people understand what have been the consequences of this period of a number of months where you've been through this experience, because you talked about they had to actually amputate.
Yeah.
So just help the listeners understand what were actually the consequences for you.
Yeah. So I'm a partial quadrilateral amputee. I like to tell people that I lost a little bit of all four of my limbs. One third of my fingers on my right, except for my thumb. All the fingers on my left. These are the prosthetics that I'm using currently.
Yes.
One third of my foot on the right and most of my toes on the left as well.
And this was because of the gangrene?
This was because of the gangrene, yeah. Right. So this had sort of set in, and then, of course, the amputations had to happen. They had to do it as two separate surgeries. And on the right foot, I think the damage was way more than they had anticipated.
And these are life or death surgeries as well, aren't they?
Yeah. So I think I was on anesthesia. I think one of the first surgeries went on for like almost 7.5 hours. So I think the doctors were very worried because I was already just out of a coma and then under general anesthesia for so long. And again, I think there's so many miracles that constantly happen. I can't tell you, right? So on the right foot, like if you don't have your metatarsals, obviously you can't walk. And in my case, I think the damage had gotten under the toe bone. But the doctor, the surgeon had the presence of mind to sort of do a manipulation and move some of the flesh around.
Right.
So I have the padding and I can actually walk without limping today. It's only thanks to the surgeon. Again, the hand surgeon did a fabulous job and I'm able to actually use my residual limbs only because of the surgeon. So,
yes.
I mean, like I said, there's so many things to be grateful for. It's not about gloating and saying that, oh my God, you know, like if you're positive, you'll get everything. And I know it doesn't work like that in every case. And that's why I keep stressing that I've been super, super fortunate. But I think it's sort of like a good vicious circle, if you will. That's not the right word. It's just a, okay. It's a cycle of being grateful and good things happening and good things happening and being grateful.
But there's something about you as well. We only met a couple of days ago. Maybe it's an aura. I don't know. But it's as if this hasn't happened. I mean, obviously, you're wearing the prosthetics now. But other than that, there's just almost no sign in you, in your body language, in your demeanor, that anything has happened. Is that a mindset with you that actually what's happened has happened, but that is not going to define me? I'm going, you know, I'm getting on with my life.
Yeah. So what you said, I don't think it was a conscious decision. I think it's more about I'm getting on with my life.
Yeah.
And normal is a very overused word. I don't think anybody needs to be normal. I'm not. But I think, and that's the beauty of it, right? I know we talk about diversity and inclusion. I'm different than you, yes, but you have something that I have and I have something that you have. You don't have, sorry. It's just about saying that all of us want to do what we want to do. Your goal could be different, my goal could be different. And if I get the help along the way to do that, then it's great. I don't think I consciously think in my head that, oh my God, I'm not going to let this define me. I'm happy to be called disabled, and there's no shame. And I do remember people telling me that, oh, but you're not disabled, you don't act disabled. What do you mean by you don't act disabled? I am disabled, and I'm proud to be disabled. I mean, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, but that doesn't define me. I'm still Sapna, who has her dreams and aspirations. I happen to be disabled, yes, and probably I need a little bit of additional help, but I don't want to be treated special. I don't know if it makes sense.
It does make sense. And in some ways, I'm listening to this slightly in awe and thinking to myself, how do you process this? And this puts things very much in perspective for, I hope, so many people listening to this. Look, we all have challenges in our life, but this is a challenge of fairly significant proportions, Sapna. It's worth also mentioning, you know, you talked about community, and obviously we've been together now on a work conference. You're back in your legal counsel role, but now in Singapore.
Yeah.
But the organization, we talk about large organizations needing to be a force for good. You're certainly of the view that your organization was a force for good for you.
Absolutely. And they continue to be so. You know, like I said, the sort of one is, of course, giving you financial support, right? I mean, that's absolutely essential. But that's not the only thing. It's also about giving you that moral support,
yes.
Never letting you feel that you're lesser than someone else. And also having great colleagues, like, you know, colleagues who are willing to support you, who have your back, literally. And also not treat you special, right? Because then you sort of feel, am I getting something only because I am disabled or only because I've gotten through this? So at no point has anyone made me feel that. And again, with large organizations, I think that's the best part, that while, yes, there is an effort to have, you know, sort of diversity of thought, diversity of people around, it's never just about checking the boxes. At least I've never felt that in my organization.
Right.
If you deserve it, you will get it. And it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from. And I'm, I think, living proof of that, if I may say so. And I'm absolutely proud to be part of this organization.
I think there were a lot of people as well who were very keen for you to tell the story. I got that impression as well, that they wanted you to tell this part of the story.
Yeah, like my table, everyone was like, no, you should absolutely do it.
I think you were voluntold, weren't you?
Yeah.
to do this.
But honestly, I also feel that I need to share my story, not just, I mean, there are two things, right? One is, of course, the medical aspect, the fact that there is so little awareness about sepsis, that people need to sort of read up on the signs and definitely not take things lightly, not sort of self-medicate, listen to their doctors, and also listen to their gut. At some, you know, when something's wrong with you, you need to rush to the ER. Please do.
Right.
Sometimes things are not normal. I think it was firstly one aspect of it was to tell people about that, and the second aspect is not to let things run you down, because it's very easy to be pulled down by others and by yourself. And the most important thing is to find the humor. You spoke about it yesterday, right? It's just to find the humor in everything. It really helps. Like I said, when I look back, I can think of all these little instances of, you know, where people were actually just, you know, my friends were making fun of me about all the different foods that I had.
Yeah.
It seems absolutely silly. And you know, one of the main concerns that I had was, will I be able to wear a sari? It is obviously something that you need to sort of use some sort of skills with your hands to sort of wear, drape yes. it around you. Those are the sort of thoughts that I had in my head. It might be extremely vain, but
I think that's why they're the practical thoughts, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I think that's why I'm here today, honestly. I believe that it's sometimes you just need to break things down into small bite-sized pieces yes. and try and attack it. Just accept that there might be things that you can't do. I remember asking the doctor, I'm like, can I play the piano? And they said, probably not, maybe with your right hand, but not with the left. And I'm so sorry, you can't, you won't be able to play it after this. I said, but I don't know how to play it. And they're like, why did you ask? I said, but I might want to. So it's...
You're a bit of an enigma on the leadership enigma, aren't you, really? I mean, that's why that's an obvious fit.
I think you need to be open to doing anything, right? I mean, there's learnings in everything that you do in life. There's nothing too big or too small. And I remember one of my leaders telling me this, that there is no role that is too big or too small. And it's always quality over, you know, quantity. Never be... And something about what you spoke yesterday as well. It's okay if you're an individual contributor. You can still be a leader.
You are.
You should be a leader in your thought, in the fact that you need to be empathetic, you need to be compassionate, and just be a decent human being.
Well, I think that's what this is about, isn't it?
That's the most important thing, yeah.
With all of this experience, and you say 2019 was a big year, you know, you've gone from that the great job, and then suddenly this experience. And all of this then is before COVID. Let's also just add that to the mix. And in fact, there was a small time gap, wasn't there, between, was it you coming out of hospital and then yeah. lockdown?
That's right. So I came out of the hospital so I moved from one hospital to the other after my vitals had stabilized. In December, I got out from hospital two.
Yes.
I had my oxygenation therapy treatments. And then my surgeries were in Feb and March
yes.
of 2020. So it was, and I still remember sitting in the hospital and laughing with a couple of my friends. They were like, oh, there's something called COVID and, you know, we don't know what this is and all that. And little did we know. And I was discharged from the hospital one day before the lockdown was announced in Mumbai. So again, like little things, and these are the things that I actually remember. And I remember telling my mom that, you know, my mom was stuck with us for the next 6 months because she couldn't travel. And I told her, I said, it's just, you know, too bad for you, but it's great for me because, again, my mom was so instrumental in my healing. She's absolutely chilled out. She's so childlike. You know, one might think that she doesn't care, but she absolutely does, because, you know, for it, she would of course be like, okay, how are you doing, are you fine, make sure that I'm eating, etc., etc. But the next moment she would be like, I saw this movie and let's watch this movie or let's listen to this song. You know, she kind of brought that normalcy back in my life. So I'm again super grateful to have her, you know, sit with me for those 6 months, forced as it may be.
Where do you think this is coming from, this almost this ability to heal, to see the good, to see the positive, to be grateful? Have you always been like that?
That's a very good question. I think I've always had the ability to separate myself from the situation.
Right.
And not think that I am so-and-so, but that this has happened to me and that's okay. And that, yes, you are your experiences. You are the people that you meet, the books that you read, etc., etc. But you can always change. I've always been that way. I just don't know how to explain it. Probably it's my... I've always loved fantasy. Like, I loved reading... of course, Enid Blyton.
Well, you're a Star Wars fan, aren't you?
I'm a Star Wars fan. I'm a Harry Potter fan. I'm a Lord of the Rings fan. I'm a Kill Bill fan.
Maybe there's something in all of that. I don't know.
No, but I think there's so much to learn from everything, right? I think life imitates art, imitates life. And yeah, I've always tried to look at myself as a character in my own life. I think not to get emotionally attached to things, to be detached in a sense, but not to the extent of being a hermit. I don't mean that. I think you need to live your life. You need to have your experiences. You need to want to enjoy life.
Yes.
And there is no shame or harm in that. But then also just, and I spoke about this yesterday, right? One of my favorite poems, which is If. This line keeps resonating in my head.
Poem. My late mom used to always talk to you about
absolutely.
The poem, If.
It's like, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same. Again, that line just keeps ringing and ringing and ringing on in my head. And something that you spoke about yesterday, it's not to, you don't have to like, you know, speak about your accomplishments. You don't need to shout from the rooftop. The same way that you don't need to keep saying, oh my God, this has happened to me. I just
doesn't
be
define
balanced.
At all.
I think, yeah, finding balance is so important.
So as you carry on now successfully in your role as legal counsel with an organization you say has been incredibly supportive, a force for good in their own right, yeah, with all of your friends and family, do you think it will in some ways help you now lead other people and inspire other people in your role? Do you think this experience is now part and parcel of the shadow of the leader that you'll be in the organization?
I hope so. I hope in some way I can inspire is too big a word. I think in some way, if I can get people to understand that life is all about living and there are so many opportunities, if not for path A, there's always path B. And I do hope that in some way people look at me and say, okay, if she can do this, why not me?
Right.
I think that's about it. I don't know if that's being a leader.
It's being a role model, which is being a leader.
Thank you. I'm very humbled, honestly, and I'm not just saying it for the sake of it. But yeah, I definitely hope that I can help people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I mean, it's an inspirational story. I just want to say a massive thank you for disrupting your day here in order to come back to the hotel and have this conversation with me. It is an inspiration. It is a real privilege for me to uncover some of these stories and meet people from all over the world and just have that diversity of thought, the diversity of experience. And I hope people find this an inspirational story for sure. But thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much. I absolutely loved it. And if anybody has any questions, they can always reach out to me. I can share my, I don't know, Instagram handle.
Yes. How can people get in touch? Because they might want to, you know, and in many ways, learn from your experience to help them get through a difficult experience. So what might be the best way to get in contact?
Instagram, probably. Okay. I do have an account. It is...
Now you have to remember.
No, it's called amputee_curly.
Okay.
Obvious, but yeah.
amputee_curly.
Curly. Yeah,
all right.
That's right. Yeah.
So they can find you on that Instagram,
yes,
account. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, have a good day.
Join us again next week for more Curiosity and Insight with the Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.